Hi, I'm Charlie, and this is Stereo Hysteria. Our July Artists of the Month, Pez Band, are a power pop band from Oak Park, Illinois, who formed in the early 1970s and honed their sound by tirelessly gigging around the same club circuit that nurtured such other Midwest power pop pioneers as Cheap Trick and Off-Broadway, with whom Pez Band has shared several members over the years. In 1977, Pez Band signed to Passport Records and recorded three top-notch LPs in as many years. But by the 80s, things had fizzled out. Years later, interest in the band by pop connoisseurs convinced them to reunite for some occasional gigs and recordings, and lead singer and songwriter Mimi Bettinas has begun releasing solo albums and keeping the Pez Band name alive with archival releases from his extensive collection. Stereo Hysteria spoke with Mimi at his home studio in Maywood, Illinois, and we'll be hearing that conversation over the next hour. But we'll begin with the brilliant leadoff track from their 1977 self-titled debut album, called Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Oh, yeah, I can take it no more. It's bad, little girl, what we're headed for. Oh, and I could tell you right now, I'm through with your lies. This is my final bow.
Did you grow up in like a musical family? Were there any musical talents or just an interest in music around the house?
Yes, I did. My mother played piano, my stepfather played guitar, and my sister played piano. When I got the bug for music, I was about in sixth grade, and my mother was always playing classical music and Mozart and that.
Okay.
So I heard this beautiful sound on the radio, little turquoise green 60s radio in the kitchen, and it was the French horn in the symphony. I said, you know, I love the way that thing sounds. And so that was my first instrument.
Okay.
And so my mom signed me up at Emerson School in Oak Park for French horn lessons, and I joined the band, and I struggled, but I played French horn for a couple of years.
Okay.
You know, I was 10, 11 years old. And then when the Beatles broke, I tried to play guitar, I couldn't, and then I kept going, and finally I made a C chord, said, I'm there.
Right.
So from there, I kept playing into high school.
Okay.
And then I learned piano from my sister. I would watch her, and I would just pick it up by ear, because I couldn't read music very well. I mean, like, simple stuff in the key of C, key of G, and D. French horn's a little difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So the French horn went away. So from there, it was playing guitar, and well, there's a picture of me in eighth grade mimicking a Beatles song for a concert at the grammar school talent show or something. Okay. And then in high school, I got electric guitar. And
mm-hmm. You got the haircut.
I got the haircut and tried, and I started with an SG and then a Gibson 330, and I heard Jeff Beck, and I saw the Yardbirds in 66. That was a wonderful year. I saw the Yardbirds in October and Jimi Hendrix in October.
Wow.
And that was at the Lyric Opera House, of all places. So there I am, and I see Jeff playing a Les Paul. I want a Les Paul. Mm. I think I saw them in October, and then Hendrix played in November at the same place. It was, you know, it was phenomenal.
I can only imagine some of the season ticket holders were just up in arms about these rock and roll hippies invading their beautiful space.
That is such a beautiful place, the Lyric Opera House. But back then, it wasn't being used much, so I guess whoever owned it at that time rented it out for whatever rock bands were traveling through. Mm. Because there weren't a lot of clubs, there was big places back then. The Electric Theater, Kinetic Playground, came later, a couple of years later. And then, of course, I saw Jeff Beck there. The Jeff Beck group was very influential to me.
Here's Pez Band Live at Beginnings, a venue in Schaumburg, Illinois, that the band played at often, as recorded for the 1978 EP, 30 Seconds Over Schaumburg, a supercharged rendition of a Mose Allison composition, later turned into a rave-up by the Yardbirds, called I'm Not Talking.
I'm not talking, that's what I gotta say. You still think I'm away? Man, I sure went through it. Things they say are chatter. Ain't those things that matter. That's one thing I can do without. I'm not talking, that's what I gotta say. You still think I'm away? Man, I sure went through it. Things they say are maybe. Ain't they say it, baby. That's one thing I can do without. Say, you still think I'm away? Maybe you still went through it. Things have been confusion. Ain't it been confusion? That's one thing I can do without. Say, they say, oh, baby, I ain't gonna say it, baby. I reach a bad conclusion. It only spreads confusion. Don't call me, baby, I'll call you.
So, what was the first band that you joined or started?
The first band that I started was called The Time.
Okay.
You know, back then in the 60s, everything was the this.
Right, the plural that. Nouns.
You know, the Sunflowers, the Ides of March. Mm-hmm. And it was just a little high school group with some of my pals. And we did Yardbird song. We did some animal songs, stuff like that.
Okay.
And then later on, we got these jam groups together later in high school.
Okay.
And we had a group called Black Pudding.
It was That's just, heavy.
Yeah, heavy. Because then things started to get heavier, you know, from the lightweight stuff to the heavier stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of morphed into an outfit called Pez.
Okay.
And why that? Well, I always loved that candy.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked the way those letters looked together.
Mm.
I thought that was kind of unusual. And then somebody said, well, why don't you call it Pez Band? because, you know, Led Zeppelin only means one thing, that group. Mm-hmm. So Pez Band would only mean one thing, that group. It wouldn't be the something or others. So we started Pez Band right out of high school, about 1970. And we were doing Badfinger, mm-hmm. No Matter What, and all that, those songs. It was good. We played little pizza joints. Any place that would have it, we'd play for free for beer and pizza. So that's how the progression of music went that way.
Okay. Were you also doing original material?
Yeah, we were doing a couple of original songs that I had written or one of the other fellas had written. But mostly it was cover material.
Okay. I think it's interesting that you were doing, like, you had one foot in the nascent power pop, the Beatles and Badfinger,
yeah.
And then the other foot in British blues. I know you've spoken about Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac being an influence in
that group. Yeah, we did that stuff too. We did Fighting for Madge, and because that was right around, you know, 1970, 71.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear some of that stuff, at, you know, that age, you're like 19, you're so impressed by it. And you live and breathe it, you know? And you want to go out, and it's like cathartic. You have to go out and play it.
Yeah.
You have to do it. You know, you have to dress that way. You have to pick up chicks. You have to smoke pot.
Right.
And we did.
It all comes with the territory.
It does, and that's what we had to do. And then Cliff joined. He was away at college, and then he stepped in around 1971 or two, and we started doing more original material.
Okay.
Cliff and I would get together in my mother's basement in Oak Park and knock out some songs. There was that one 1972...
United Technique thing?
The United Technique demo thing.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's not very good, but...
When it came out last year, I was surprised at how, like, fully formed it was.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how awful some of that stuff sounds. No, I was playing a wah-wah pedal. I think I must have gotten it the week before. Because I can't, you know, you hear it say, to me, I listened to it, that is awful. It's just, I was new to it. I had no experience on it.
Right.
But people seem to like it. I don't know.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah.
From United Technique 1972, the first studio demos, released for the first time last year, here's an early version of a Cliff Johnson Mimi Bettinas composition, later revisited on Off-Broadway's 1979 debut album On, called Drop Me a Line.
Drop me a line from your space and time. Take me along in the night.
I dare say the version of Drop Me a Line on that is better than the off-Broadway version.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's another song Cliff and I, we put that together in my mother's basement. And we had a lot of fun with that song because, you know, we thought it was kind of Beatly, Badfinger-ish. We also liked Traffic.
Mm.
So a lot of Traffic influence there.
Okay.
Drop Me a Line and Somewhere, which is one of my songs, were I think some of the better songs. On a White Tide, that was a better song. And that's just a couple of chords. It was just a feel song. There was nothing to it. Later on, Cliff took that and mauled it into some other song. It just it never worked. You know, some of those things that you come up with, like it's like the initial sketch, that's it.
Yeah.
You try to rework it later on. You know, something about the time and the place and how those things come together.
Yeah.
A lot of music is that way. You can't recreate it again.
Right. Recapture the same feeling that brought it into the world in the first place.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You know.
I noticed that Cliff has songwriting credits on each of the three Pez Band albums.
Mm-hmm.
Were those songs that you were woodshedding in the early days in Oak Park, or did you keep a songwriting collaboration going?
No, those are songs that we had just written together. And, of course, Cliff had moved on, as he always does, to something else.
Mm.
No, we used those songs on the records.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Cliff left in late 74 or 75, early 75. At that time, we were playing all the clubs here.
Okay.
And we were also starting to go out east to Pennsylvania and New Jersey and New York State. We had a booking agent that, you know, they would book you for a couple weeks at one joint.
Okay. So like a residency?
Yeah. You went out, we play Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania for 2 weeks.
Okay.
It's kind of...
So that was your Hamburg.
Yeah, it was. It was that way. Yeah, I never thought of it. Yeah, but that's exactly what it was, yeah. And then we would come home and we'd play Strawberry County out here in Schiller Park. Because back then there were lots of clubs. Harlow's on the south side, Baby Huey's, The Rush Up. Mm. Oh, that was a big... We played The Rush Up a lot. That was very Hamburgish because we started at 8 and we left at 4
okay.
in the morning. We would be there for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then come back again for the next week. Then they would, so you guys did real well. Come back for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's how that was.
And, okay.
And we got very popular. People started really liking us a lot. And then Cliff left, and we had a singer for about 8 months. His name was Wes Davis. And that didn't work out, so I just went back to where we started, which was with me singing, and kept playing.
Okay.
Just kept playing clubs, kept the buzz going, and then we started playing more and more out east and drawing more, and finally we got management out there, and that's where we landed the record deal.
Okay, with a Passport?
With Passport, the black and white record, you know, and that was in 76.
Okay.
So we started that record in 76, and it went over into the winter, came out in April of 77, which was a tremendous year for us.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of enthusiasm. You know, we had management. There was a little bit of money. It was very low budget, but the management had more money than the record company because they kept us going. So we rented a house, and we had the studio. And
this was in New Jersey?
In West Orange, New Jersey. And the studio was in right there in Orange, New Jersey, West Orange. It was owned by Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
So that's how we got Clarence Clemons and the Brecker Brothers and all those guys, Larry Fast. Those guys were all studio guys. Mm.
Coming up, we'll hear a track from the self-titled debut Pez Band album featuring the late, great Clarence Clemons on saxophone called Let's Dance.
Saw you at the dance last night. I couldn't believe my eyes. I said, hold me tight. Rock me till the music dies. Dance you right out your shoes. You shook it across the floor. When they rock the blues, I wanted you more and more. You gotta give me, gotta give me, gotta give me a chance. You gotta give me, gotta give me, gotta give me romance.
chance. You gotta give me, gotta give me, gotta give me romance. Come on, let's dance. Baby, let's dance. Come on, let's dance. Oh, let's dance.
And so back then they wanted the records to have a polished sound.
Mm-hmm.
We were much heavier than that record.
Mm-hmm.
People love that record. And it's still, people still like it. People still buy it.
Yeah.
Because it has a sound to it.
Right.
It was like the first power pop sound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Cheap Trick records didn't sound like that record.
Yeah.
Even though their record had a black and white cover. But they were all later, and the Knack was all later.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, you know, say with pride that we were the first ones mm-hmm. to do it.
Yeah.
And have that kind of sound, and then everybody followed. But when we were making the record, we were so green. Even though we had done a lot of studio demos, this time we were doing a professional record.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't play that loud. You've got to turn down. You got to retake it. You're singing flat. We were really under the microscope. And if they said, stand on your head and play your Les Paul, that's what we would do, you know. So we recorded it in a couple of weeks. And then it came in for the mix. And said, well, here's your single, Baby, It's Cold Outside. I said, what? That's not what we sounded like. Mm-hmm. We were much heavier.
Right.
We don't have a saxophone player.
Right. There's that synth that comes in at the end.
Yeah. I hate synth. You know? I did back then. Mm-hmm. Now I like it a lot better. But back then it was like, what are you doing? But we had no control over it. You know? Mm-hmm. That's the way it was. And off it went to the pressing plant. And the singles came out, and then off we went.
Right.
Okay, you're going here, you're going there, and you're going to Washington, D.C., and then you're going to England in November. Huh? Wow. It was a whirlwind.
Mm.
The first 8 months, which we were just flying.
Right.
It was wonderful. I was 24, 25, and we were on top of the world. It was great.
I have to ask, because you are sort of in this first class of power pop, what was your attitude towards that term? Because I've talked to, like, Paul Collins, and he's sort of like, I liked power pop back then, but then the Knack came out, and they ruined everything.
Yeah, the Knack did ruin everything. The record company Passport and Marty Scott had hired a promotional agency. I was Howard Bloom or one of the big ones out of New York. And one of the guys in there came up with that phrase. Said, well, we got to call it something.
Yeah.
And he said, let's call it power pop. And then we had a wonderful PR person. Her name's Ida Langstrom. She's still in the business. And she was just a beautiful girl and just an absolute gem. And she knew Jane Pauley at the Today Show.
Mm.
And she called Jane and said, you know, all the kids are listening to this stuff. And so Jane said, oh, okay, well, let's do a spot on them. And lo and behold, they didn't put us on the TV, but the T-shirt and the record and the power pop thing was on the Today Show in 77.
Okay.
So it really kind of planted us where we needed to go. And we were going.
Yeah. Like on the second album, you can definitely tell this is a band that's working really hard and writing a lot and not taking too much time to overthink.
True, yeah. You couldn't overthink because you didn't have any time to.
Right, there's a lot of forward momentum in that album.
Yes. The only problem that I have to say with that record, even though I like a lot of the songs that are on there, is the production wasn't as good as like the first record was. The first record was produced a lot better. It was a little more slick.
Okay.
And that's because the guy who produced the second record had never produced a band in his whole life.
Hmm.
And somehow or another, somebody got talked into getting this guy to go to England with us and produce the record. But we didn't know any different, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing in the liner notes that it was produced and mixed in England and then remixed somewhere else.
Yeah, it had problems in it. And the studio in England was pretty cool. It was a Jethro Tull studio.
Mm.
So we were really charged to be there.
Right.
It was really great. We were there almost a month. Jeez, here we are making a record in England. We were so Englishified.
Right.
It was great. We came home with our nose in the air.
Did you pick up an accent?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. We were very impressionable. It was a lot for some kids from Oak Park to, a few years later, you know, look back and say, we were here, and now we're playing stadiums, opening up for Fleetwood Mac and Supertramp and Mahogany Rush and Blondie, and we're doing all the New York scene, and it was pretty good.
Next, we'll hear a highlight from 1978's Laughing in the Dark, a song called I'm the One.
That record was that Hypnosis, that art production company, they did that cover, and just having that done for us unknowns, no hit record.
Right. Because they had done like Pink Floyd and Genesis and UFO, and I think that year they did the XTC Go To album, which is one of my favorite album
covers.
Oh, that's
a great record. Great stuff, yeah. But to have them do our record, we had a connection in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the connection was, but I don't think those are our hands. Somebody did that.
So is it just a picture of the four of you smiling and then hands overlaid?
Yeah. Mick came up with the title, Laughing in the Dark, which is kind of a weird, but I don't know exactly what that implies, but mm-hmm. it was supposed to imply something. You know? You're in the dark and you're laughing, so maybe you're just high. I don't know. But it was unusual.
Yeah.
It's got an odd color to it. And I remember taking the pictures, but I don't know if that's our hands. Because I looked, I said, that's not my hand there. Somebody else's hand. Anyway, the big thing was that hypnosis did it.
Yeah.
So
put you in good company.
Yeah, and that put us more on the map. And we lived out east for almost 3 years.
Okay.
You know, we would play... The latest thing were malls, you know. Mm-hmm. Malls had just been invented back then. So we would play a mall.
Mm.
And I have a recording of us at the mall. And the band sounds fantastic. It's just, wow, what a sound.
Yeah.
Because we were there with Marshalls mm-hmm. and PA and everything.
Right.
Sennheiser microphones, mic'd up everything, and the big drum kit and... And so we would do these in-stores. There was a record store there. They had put a stage up for us. We would come in and play 40 minutes and then go and get off stage. And we'd go and sign records and T-shirts and all that.
Yeah.
And it was really great. And then that night we would play somewhere else.
Okay. I mean,
that would be like a 1 o'clock show.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night we'd play some club for a couple of hours. That's how things were a lot back then.
Yeah, two shows a day.
Sometimes we would do that, two shows a day. I think some of the most exciting things were being on tour and doing, we did a lot of radio shows in New York, and we did a TV show in New York, a small station.
Mm-hmm.
And that made us very popular. Our records were played out there at the time, where WXRT here, they never really supported Pez Band or Off-Broadway too much.
Hmm.
And still to this day, there's a fan base out there that is still alive and well because they were all 10 years younger than us. So we impressed them. And once they were a fan, they were always a fan.
Yeah.
And so when some of my solo records sell, or even the Pez Band records, they're selling out there.
Mm-hmm. But not so much at home?
Not so much around here.
Hmm.
But they are still selling and being played out on the East Coast.
Okay.
It was fantastic. Wow.
So yeah, it's 1979 and you're doing cover to cover. Like you've put out 3 albums in as many years, 2 live EPs. I can only imagine that's got to be pretty taxing.
Yeah, it was. The... cover-to-cover record was done with John Pavletic. And
that was back in Illinois, right?
Yeah, that was in Brookfield, Illinois.
Okay.
And that was it was a little sad in some respects. The record company said, well, you know, we signed you for 3 records, but there isn't any tour money because we weren't selling records.
Hmm. So they kind of let you know the writing was on the wall?
Yeah, that was about it.
Here's a pensive tune from 1979's cover-to-cover. Originally written in an Oak Park basement by Mimi and Cliff Johnson, called Didn't We?
I tried so hard to
John was very supportive of us and helped a great deal. We rented a little house there. We did the basic tracks in one little place and then brought everything into the studio and recorded stuff. And then things started to wane, you know. The management gradually stepped out and the record company kind of stepped out. And by 1980, we were kind of just left on our own. And that was rough because 3 years earlier, you know, you're flying.
Right.
And that's how the music business, that's how the entertainment business is.
Sure.
You know, you're up and you're down. And you either keep plowing ahead like Cheap Trick. You know, they had a great manager. And they managed us for a while, Adam Annie and Toller. They managed us for a while. Adam Annie kept them going no matter what. If the record was up or down, if there was money, it didn't matter. You play this bar in Beloit for a week. And then you go to Janesville and play, well, that's just down the street. Well, it doesn't matter. The point is that they kept going and going and going and going. Well, me, I said, forget it. I can't do it anymore. But Mick and I kept writing, and then we did the Women in Politics stuff.
Okay.
So that was done with a friend of ours from Oak Park High, Paul Brusek.
Okay.
He was a wonderful friend, great musician, great piano player, had a great ear for production. Things went very well for Paul, as Paul is now the president of Warner Brothers Film Division.
Oh, wow.
Music. I mean, he's way up there.
Yeah.
But back in 1980, Paul was working for the record plant in Los Angeles, and he really liked these songs that we had done, and he wanted to take us out. So we had John Pasden playing bass. So we went out to the record plant and cut those records.
Okay.
And so, Paul tried to, you know, sell them because it's kind of punkish, a little. The sound is so much different than Baby It's Cold Outside.
Right.
But it had the same label. It had the Pez Band label on it. I think it confused a lot of people. Said, this is not, doesn't sound like this band.
From Women in Politics, the four-song EP the band recorded in 1982, which was finally commercially released in 2016, this is Waiting in Line.
I'm trying to read your mind.
just sort of interested in the trajectory of you and the other band members after Pez Band split.
Well, right after Pez Band split, I went back out to Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I lived with Paul. I was out there as a hired gun.
Mm-hmm.
Then I ended up working with Tom Peterson. He had left Cheap Trick, and mm-hmm. he was doing a solo thing with his goofy wife. And I was with them for a while. And that was real scary. And I just split.
Mm-hmm.
I had it with the music business by that time.
Okay.
I came back. I went back to art school. I finished up my art degree. Then I got a teaching certificate. And then I was lucky. I got a full-time job as a art teacher. So I taught art for 22 years.
Okay.
In that time, I hooked up with Cliff again
mm-hmm.
in about 1991. And we formed Black and Blonde. It was great because we were writing like a song a week. We had so much material. Then that kind of morphed into the reformed Off-Broadway with me in it.
Okay.
And then we did a record with Just in Time, which is probably one of Cliff and mine, one of our best songs. I don't know if you know that song.
Yeah, yeah.
But we wrote that together, My Little Apartment and Over in Oak Park. I think it's one of our best songs, really.
Mm.
Here's Off-Broadway from their 1997 reunion album, Fallen In, with Just in Time.
Now that I found you here in my heart again, don't ever disappear or try to slip
It was the roaring 90s.
Mm-hmm.
There was money.
Yeah.
There was time. There was recordings. We were doing this. We did that. We covered a Raspberry song tonight.
For the Raspberries
tonight,
Preserved.
I'll be with you tonight.
Yeah.
But then I got fed up with that. There were some problems with the group. So I left the group in 99, I think, 98, okay. 99. I just kind of laid low for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I taught art for 22 years, but I was still doing, you know, writing some music mm-hmm. and doing things. Then my art job, they closed my position. Mm-hmm. They closed the school. Said, art teachers like you, no more.
Kids don't need to learn about art.
Nope, no more art teachers. I said to my principal, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm older. Nobody's going to hire her. That's what she said. She said, you're too old. You only teach one thing. They want young teachers.
Mm.
They want like 30-year-olds who can teach at least two subjects, and they go in for half your salary.
Right.
So I was out of luck. And so that's just the way it shaked out. So she said, take your pension and good luck. So that's what I did.
And then it was sort of back to music?
Yeah, it was all back to music.
All right.
So I had more time on my hands and had a little bit of money, and I invested it all here. And that's what I've been doing.
Nice.
I play out once in a while, but I'm not real keen on playing because, you know, playing as a trio is difficult, I tell you, because it's all on me. You know, you're the rhythm guitar, the lead guitar, and the lead singer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a burden. It's harder to do at this age. You know, when you're 25, you can do anything.
Yeah.
When you're 65, it's harder to do one thing. So that's how it is.
Okay.
I mean, I would be interested in playing, you know, maybe if the original group were to do something, maybe go back to Japan.
Mm.
That would be kind of fun.
Okay.
Because then I have Mike singing with me.
Yeah.
And Mike and I are very close. We do a lot of stuff together.
Yeah.
He plays on my records.
Right.
And he lives right here in Forest Park.
Okay.
So he was very close. In fact, I just talked to him last night. So
okay.
Mike's great. He's doing real well.
Excellent. And you did get back together, and remember you released the It's All Love song?
Yeah, It's All Love. That's from the Wall to Wall recordings.
Okay.
We recorded some real cool stuff down there. We'll work on another record, but it all kind of fell apart.
Mm.
And I thought that was a pretty good song.
Yeah, yeah.
Mick and I wrote that.
Okay.
It's got a great message.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that universal message.
Right.
Those are all mixed lyrics, I think. He's very good at that, very good at writing stuff like that. It's kind of gets a little ethereal, and you know, there's a couple of corny lines in there, but it's all kind of seems to work, you know.
Released as a digital single in 2014, here's Pez Band reunited with It's All Love.
It's all love. It's all love. Born and renamed,
Is there anything that you can tell me about the new solo record?
I am about halfway done. I am hoping to release it this year.
Okay.
The title is called A Door.
A Door?
A Door. Kenny comes over once a week and puts his 2 cents into everything and puts down a drum beat and says, here, try to do something with this.
Okay.
And so I write something around that.
Nice.
We've got some good stuff. John just got finished doing the cover-to-cover record.
Mm-hmm.
He's remixed it, retimed it, retuned it. It just sounds wonderful.
So are you planning to put out like a big deluxe reissue of all this stuff?
Well, I don't know. John said we should just put out cover-to-cover. He said, just, you know, buy some ad time and put it out and put it up on CD Baby. And we can't afford to make CDs and go through all that.
Mm-hmm.
To do a best of, we'd have to take the Laughing in the Dark record and remaster that.
Okay.
And see if we can't retime it, get it a little tighter.
Right.
And then I could put out a best of Pez Band record, which I think I want to do. And right there to your right, there's all live.
These
of
cassettes?
Pez Band live.
Okay.
And some of that stuff sounds really great. Live in little clubs.
Yeah.
Because we often would record. We would have the four track going. That TAC came with us everywhere.
Okay.
So we're always recording. It ended up in my hands after the band kind of split up. So some of those are good quality.
Okay. Interesting.
So what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, there's a cover-to-cover release that can be done. Then there's a best of that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a live record that can be done.
Okay.
And then there's my stuff that can be done. So I'm really quite busy with that, all of that. And, you know, counting my nickels that come in. You got played in New Zealand. You get 0.000009. Oh, great. It's not much money.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even pay an electric bill.
But right.
I guess the point is I'm happy to do it. I'm glad I'm still able to do it. And that the music is still out there.
Yeah.
And it's going around the world even more.
And that's just about all the time we have for this week's episode. I'd like to thank Mimi Bettinas for taking the time to talk with Stereo Hysteria. And if you'd like any more information about Mimi or Pez Band, check out the official website at popmusicsounds.com. Be sure to tune in again next week when our topic will be songs about fun. But before we go, we'll hear the lead-off track from Mimi's second solo album, 2016's Music Sounds, a track featuring original Pez Band bassist Mike Gorman and drummer Kenny Hark, formerly of Off-Broadway, called Pontiac. This is Charlie, signing off.
Ever sit and wonder why things are the way they are? Why do mountains tower over us? Why are dreams so bizarre? As luck would have it, I jumped in a Pontiac car, headed west, California way, Hollywood and the stars. So I sit here wondering why, how this all went down. Blue-eyed babe in arms last night, today she's not around. To nothing.